The T-Biz podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Each year, the T-Biz portal publishes the State of the Tea Industry Forecast, a forward-looking assessment of production, pricing, trade, and demand. We invite tea professionals across the value chain to review the findings and contribute their perspective. Your insights help refine the forecast before it is finalized on March 1st.
Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. War costs are mounting. China opens a zero tariff access, but compliance decides who benefits. And U.S. tariff refunds begin April 20th. What tea importers need to do now. Plus, redefining tea quality. The first of three segments exploring tea on Earth Day 2026. Specialty tea has long defined quality through craftsmanship, origin, and terroir. These pillars have shaped how producers grow tea, how buyers evaluate it, and how consumers understand value in the cup. But a new layer is emerging, one that shifts attention beneath the surface. As environmental pressures intensify across global agriculture, regenerative farming is entering the tea conversation. Its focus on soil health, biodiversity, and ecosystem resilience introduces a deeper question, not just where tea is grown, but how the land itself is managed over time. In this episode, Bernadine Tay, president of the European Specialty Tea Association, explores whether regenerative agriculture will remain a sustainability sidebar or reshape how quality itself is defined. Quote, "The adoption of regenerative tea farming may redefine tea quality," says Tay, "but only if the industry gets it right." End quote. More in a minute. But first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia tea estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
Rising geopolitical tensions are rapidly increasing tea production costs and affecting the global supply chain. This pressure starts at origin with surging fertilizer and fuel costs driven by the Middle East conflict. These are critical as fertilizer affects yield and fuel is essential for every stage of production. But from field transport to factory operations, the crisis mounts. From India, Kenya, Sri Lanka to Japan, producers are signaling the impact. Tea manufacturing remains energy intensive, particularly during the drying phase, where oil-fired systems are still widely used. As one Japanese regional governor noted, rising fuel costs are expected to push production costs higher over time, with direct implications for export pricing. But the more immediate disruption is logistical and far more consequential. The Strait of Hormuz, a critical maritime choke point, is now constraining vessel movement into the Gulf. For the tea trade, this is not an abstract risk. Dubai functions as a central blending, packing, and re-export hub, particularly for high-volume, value-added teas produced by multinational firms, including Lipton and many private label manufacturers. When shipments are delayed or blocked en route to Dubai, the disruption cascades. Bulk teas from origin cannot reach the blending facilities. Blending schedules are interrupted. Packaging lines sit idle, and finished goods are delayed for export. This creates a bottleneck not just for raw tea, but for finished, ready retail tea destined for Europe, North America, and emerging markets. The consequence is a shift in where inventory risk sits. Traditionally, retailers worry about upstream supply, crop size, auction prices, and freight rates. Now the risk is midstream. Tea that exists has been purchased but is physically stranded in the system. For buyers in the UK and Germany, key re-export and packaging centers themselves, this introduces a second layer of uncertainty. Many rely on semi-finished blends arriving from hubs like Dubai for final packaging and distribution. Delays at that stage ripple directly into retail availability. This situation is particularly acute for large-scale standardized blends where consistency depends on multi-origin sourcing and centralized blending. If one component from origin is delayed, the entire blend formulation can stall. And this is where the cost story becomes complex. Higher input costs at origin are one layer. Freight volatility is another. But disruption to value addition hubs introduces a third, operational inefficiency. Factories running below capacity, rescheduling production, and managing fragmented arrivals all drive up per-unit costs. These are rarely visible in auction prices, but they are very visible in margins. For Japan, the implications extend further. Export-oriented regions are already seeing margin compression from energy costs alone, even before factoring in logistics. For countries dependent on long-distance shipping routes, such as Sri Lanka, India, and East Africa, the exposure is even greater. There is no longer localized disruption. It's now systemic. Business Insight. What we are seeing is not a single shock, but a stacking of shocks across the value chain. Energy inflation increases production costs. Geopolitical instability disrupts logistics, and centralized value addition models amplify both risks. The industry has spent two decades optimizing for efficiency. Consolidated blending hubs, just-in-time logistics, global sourcing. That model is now under stress. The immediate implication is cost escalation and delivery uncertainty. But the structural implications are important as well. The tea trade may be forced to reevaluate where value is added and how risk is distributed across the supply chain. In practical terms, that could mean more decentralized blending and packing, greater inventory buffers, and a shift away from single hub dependency. Because in the current environment, efficiency is no longer the primary objective. Resilience is. China is opening the door to African tea, but only for those who can meet a new and very specific set of rules. Effective May 1st, the General Administration of Customs of China will grant zero tariff access to exports from 53 African nations. On the surface, that's a significant shift. It creates a potential alternative market at a time when African tea exporters are facing rising barriers to entry in Europe. But the reality is a little more complex. It's not a simple tariff reduction story. It's a compliance story. To qualify for zero tariffs, exporters must demonstrate that at least 40% of the product's value has been added within Africa. For tea, that means more than just harvesting and shipping. It requires meaningful domestic processing, sorting, grading, packaging, and clear documentation that proves transformation at origin. It favors orthodox production, for example, and packaging and blending within the country. That alone will reshape how some exporters think about their supply chains. But the bigger hurdle is regulatory. Under GACC Decree 280, which moves into full enforcement within 60 days, all food exporters must be registered in China's CIFER system. That's the China Import Food Enterprise Registration Platform. If a factory is not registered, the shipment doesn't clear, full stop. That means zero tariff benefit is effectively irrelevant unless exporters are already inside the system. And that's where the risk sits today. Many African tea producers, particularly small factories and independent processors, are not yet registered. The process requires documentation, facility audits, and alignment with China's food safety and traceability standards. So while the policy opens the door, the compliance threshold determines who can actually walk through it. Now, layer this against what's happening in Europe. The EU remains a primary destination for African tea, but tightening enforcement of maximum residue levels is raising the bar significantly. Exporters in countries like Uganda, Tanzania, and Zimbabwe are already navigating higher testing costs, stricter compliance, and increasing rejection risk. So the industry is being squeezed from both sides. Europe is tightening the standards while China is in the opening access, but only for those who can meet a different set of regulatory requirements. The result is not a shift from one market to another. It's a segmentation of trade flows. Compliant, well-capitalized exporters may gain a second outlet, China as a volume market alongside Europe. Others may find themselves increasingly constrained, facing higher costs in Europe with limited ability to pivot. Business Insight. This is a structural turning point. China is not just offering tariff relief, it is redefining market access around compliance infrastructure. Digital registration, traceability, and value-added processing are no longer optional. They are prerequisites. For African tea producers, the message is clear. Market access is no longer determined solely by price. It's determined by whether your systems align with your buyer's regulatory architecture. And in this environment, compliance isn't just a cost, it's a competitive advantage. A significant cash flow event is about to hit U.S. tea importers. U.S. Customs and Border Protection has confirmed that the first phase of refunds for duties imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or IEEPA, will begin rolling out April 20th. This is not theoretical. It's an operational opportunity. The mechanism's new tool is called CAPE, the Consolidated Administration and Processing of Entries. It's deployed inside CBP's Automated Commercial Environment, or ACE, portal. Importers who paid IEEPA-related tariffs over the past year now have a defined pathway to recover those funds. Here's the key detail. Phase 1 is limited in scope. Eligible entries only apply to unliquidated entries and entries within 80 days of liquidation. Excluded for now are the more complex cases, entries tied to drawback claims, open protests, AD/CDV exposure, or those already finalized. For tea companies, especially those importing from China under layered tariff regimes, this matters. Some firms have been carrying six-figure duty burdens on inventory. This process begins to reverse that. But the burden is on the importer to act. CBP requires verified access to the ACE portal, enrollment in ACH refunds programs to actually receive the bank payment, submission of entry data via CSV uploads, and internal reconciliation of which duties fall under IEEPA versus other tariff lines. In practical terms, this is a data exercise as much as a legal one. Companies need to isolate affected entries, segment them by eligibility, and prepare filings immediately. Phase 1 will process the majority of straightforward claims, but not all. Additional phases are expected to capture the more complex scenarios. There's also a timing dimension. Refunds will be aggregated and issued electronically based on liquidation or re-liquidation cycles. This means delays in filing could translate directly into delayed cash recovery. For tea importers already managing margin compression from elevated freight costs, tightening EU MRL compliance requirements, and volatile auction pricing, this is a rare new term financial tailwind. Business Insight. This is less about compliance and more about liquidity. The companies that move fastest will effectively convert last year's tariff expense into working capital in quarter two and quarter three. Those who delay will leave cash stranded inside the system. Given current market conditions, that's not a trivial mistake. Subscribe free to the TBiz newsletter for filing guidance and technical instructions, and see CBP's website for rollout details. The Week 15 Tea Price Report for the period ending April 10th is sponsored by the East Africa Tea Trade Association, owners of the Mombasa Tea Auction since 1956. Tea markets closed Week 15 with conditions still stable, but with a subtle shift in what is driving that stability. Across the major auction centers, Colombo, North India, Mombasa, and Indonesia, buyer activity remains steady but highly selective. Demand continues to focus on teas needed for immediate blending and export commitments, with well-made teas attracting consistent competition. At the same time, secondary teas continue to face a more difficult environment. Clearance often requires price adjustment, reinforcing the widening gap between premium and standard quality across the catalog. In Colombo, prices averaged $3.22 per kilogram this week, the same as Week 14. Broker reporting indicates selective strength in high-grown and clean leafy grades, while secondary and plainer teas required concessions to clear. In North India, prices averaged $1.91 per kilo this week, up 3 cents from the last available average on Week 13, reflecting firmer North India benchmarks and continued support for Assam liquidity grades and improved buyer coverage. Mombasa prices averaged $2.20 per kilo this week, down 1 cent versus Week 14, reflecting a slightly easier condition in selected BP1 and PF1 and dust grades, but amid steady but non-aggressive buyer participation. EATTA statistics confirm marginal softening in the latest available sale. Indonesia prices averaged $2.42 per kilo this week, up 1 cent since Week 14, reflecting modestly improved demand signals from global trade reporting. Subscribe for free to the TBiz newsletter for detailed regional breakdowns, 6-month trade signals, and near-term outlook for quarter two pricing dynamics. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and I founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish@nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Specialty tea has long defined quality through craftsmanship, origin, and terroir. These pillars have shaped how producers grow tea, how buyers evaluate it, and how consumers understand value in the cup. But a new layer is emerging, one that shifts attention beneath the surface. As environmental pressures intensify across global agriculture, regenerative farming is entering the tea conversation. Its focus on soil health, biodiversity, and ecosystem resilience introduces a deeper question, not just where tea is grown, but how the land itself is managed over time. In this TBiz Spotlight, Bernadine Tay, president of the European Specialty Tea Association, explores whether regenerative agriculture will remain a sustainability sidebar or reshape how quality itself is defined. Bernadine's background spans sourcing, judging, training, and industry advocacy with a focus on translating origin practices into credible market signals. At ESTA, she is helping guide the definition, evaluation, and communication of emergence frameworks, such as regenerative agriculture, ensuring that new narratives are grounded in verifiable practice rather than marketing abstraction. She's the founder of Quintessential, a UK-based tea design and consultancy company, working with leading hospitality groups to develop tea programs, blends, and experiences that elevate tea to the level of fine food and beverage. With a background in biomedical science, Bernadine brings a structured, evidence-led approach to tea. With a background in biomedical science, Bernadine brings a structured, evidence-led approach to tea, bridging sensory expertise with scientific understanding of wellness and composition. Thank you so much for joining us, Bernadine, on the Tea Biz podcast.
Oh, thank you, Dan. Thank you always for having me on.
Specialty tea has traditionally emphasized craftsmanship and terroir. Where does regenerative agriculture fit within that framework?
So you are so right, Dan. Traditionally, specialty tea defines quality through flavor, craftsmanship, and terroir. But what's interesting to me is, does regenerative agriculture sit alongside terroir and craftsmanship? Or can it fundamentally redefine what we consider quality in specialty tea? So regenerative agriculture introduces a new dimension, which is how the land is treated over time. I don't think it replaces terroir. I think it deepens it, because terroir isn't static. It's shaped by how the soil is managed, how biodiversity is supported, and how resilient that ecosystem is. So the real shift is, quality may no longer just be about what you taste in a cup, but what's happening in the ground over years. So essentially, regenerative doesn't sit beside quality. It challenges us to expand what quality means.
What distinguishes a credible regenerative tea program from one that is primarily marketing driven?
Regenerative risks becoming another sustainability buzzword unless we're very clear on what it actually means in practice. And for buyers, credibility comes down to three things for me. First, it's evidence. What is actually being done on the farm? Not just claims, but practices. Second, consistency over time. Regeneration isn't a one-season story. It's a long-term commitment. And third, and most importantly, translation. Can those practices be clearly linked to something the buyer or consumer understands, whether that's flavor, quality, or long-term supply resilience? And buyers don't pay for intention, they buy for clarity.
Many sustainability programs struggle to translate farming practices into consumer value. Can regenerative agriculture bridge that gap?
So sustainability has always struggled commercially because it often asks the consumer to care, but doesn't give them a reason to choose. What's interesting is that there's a huge gap right now. Most consumers say they care about sustainability, but over 70% don't actually understand what regenerative agriculture means. So we're asking them to value something they don't yet recognize. And regenerative has the opportunity to bridge that gap, but only if it's positioned differently. If it's framed purely as, this is better for the planet, it just becomes a nice to have. But if it's linked to flavor expression, uniqueness, and long-term quality, then it becomes part of the product's value. Ethics alone, I feel, won't drive sales. Just experience will do it.
How important will regenerative agriculture become in the specialty tea conversation?
So from Esther's perspective, our long-term goal is to ensure that specialty tea is understood and valued at a level that truly reflects its quality, its complexity, and the work behind it. That means shifting tea away from the commodity mindset towards something that sits alongside wine or fine food, where origin, craftsmanship, and experience are properly recognized. Regenerative culture fits into this because it strengthens both the story and the substance of specialty tea. It brings the focus back to the health of the land, the resilience of the system, and potentially even the expression of flavor over time. But for that to matter commercially, we need to be able to define it, evaluate it, and communicate it clearly. Otherwise, it remains a narrative rather than something that the market can value. And that's where we see our role as helping to bring clarity and what quality means as the category evolves. Now, I don't think the industry is fully ready yet, and that's precisely why this conversation is important. We don't yet have shared definitions, clear benchmarks, or frameworks for evaluating regenerative tea. So right now, it's very fragmented. But that creates an opportunity, especially for organizations like Esther, to help shape what good looks like before the term becomes diluted. Because if we don't define it, the market will. And then it will likely default to marketing rather than substance.
If regenerative practices influence soil health and flavor expression, could they reshape how quality is assessed?
Well, if regenerative practices genuinely influence soil health and flavor expression, then yes, we do need to rethink how we evaluate tea, because our current frameworks are heavily based on what's in the cup in a single moment in time. Regenerative agriculture introduces something different. It's about trajectory over time. So the question becomes, how do we start to recognize not just flavor, but conditions that can enable great flavor consistently? That might mean expanding our evaluation frameworks to include factors like farming practices, ecosystem health or resilience, not replacing sensory evaluation, but complementing it. That's where I think the industry needs to evolve. We're good at evaluating tea at the moment, but not yet evaluating how the quality is sustained over time. Regenerative agriculture only becomes meaningful in specialty tea when it moves from a story where we tell to a standard we can evaluate. And once that happens, it won't just be about a sustainability conversation, it becomes a quality conversation. Because the bottom line, if the market can't recognize it, it can't reward it. And once we do that, I think we can then fulfill the mission of giving back to the planet.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.